Hi, this is Mike Miller, and you're on the Harmony Street Show. And it's my extreme pleasure to have as my guest a rock and roll legend, R&B legend, Mr. Personality, Rock and Roll Hall of Fame inductee, Mr. Lloyd Price. How are you, Lloyd?
I am excellent, Mike. How are you?
I'm fine, and I'm glad to have this opportunity to talk to you because we have so much to talk about. Let's just go back to the beginning. You were born in Louisiana.
That's right, in New Orleans.
Right, no kidding. And, of course, we know that New Orleans has been in the news for the last couple of years, and that's, you know, it was always a special place, and now it's become a special place for different reasons, you know, and we can talk about that later. But you were into music at an early age.
That's right, Mike. When I got hooked on music, I was 7 years old, and I used to sweep this saloon. They called them a jukebox saloon.
Wow.
For Mr. Ike Santana in Kendall, Louisiana. That's suburbs of New Orleans.
Right.
And he would play the jukebox so I can dance for him. And from that, I learned all the lyrics, of the records on the jukebox. And it was only 10 records.
Right, I see.
That time, that was huge.
Right. Hey, listen, I know artists that have been singing for years that don't know the lyrics to 10 songs and can sing them all the way through.
Right.
And when you were young, your mom owned a restaurant, I understand.
Yes, that was later on. And I was probably going 12, 13 years old. She opened what she called the fish and fish fry. Restaurant. She would fry fish from Thursday through Saturday and perhaps sometime on Sunday.
Wow.
And sell fish and potato salad sandwiches with soft drinks and, you know, little cookies and stuff like that. And she had a jukebox, so I learned to sing most songs.
Well, that's interesting. But you were not a chubby kid, huh?
No, I really wasn't, you know.
Because if my mother owned a fish fry place, I'll tell you what, I would have been a chubby teenager.
Well, I guess why I didn't really get hooked on it, I had to clean them.
I see. Yeah.
Imagine when it's like cleaning that fish in the sunshine.
Yeah, so you really got emotionally involved with them.
Let's just say it was a smelly situation.
Yeah, I hear you. I hear you. Well, you know, we're both Pisces. We were both born in March, so Pisces are very sensitive, you know.
That's right.
And very spiritual.
Yes. Yes. And I'd like to say honest and very given.
Oh, absolutely. Absolutely. Well, you know, I live in my own little dream world, and my wife will tell you that. She's a Taurus. And she's very grounded, so I need her in my life because, you know, when my feet start floating off the ground, she grabs me by the belt and pulls me back down.
Let me ask you, is it really true? My wife is a Taurus as well, and I've had 3 Taurus girlfriends. It is true that Pisces just fall in that trap for Taurus?
Well, you know, at the risk of my wife listening to this interview, I've had a bunch of Taurus women in my life. My mother was a Taurus as well, and it was her way of the highway.
Yeah, I mean, that's exactly what I'm talking about.
You know, I have spoken. You know.
Yeah, man, you know, I said, why am I always getting hooked with these Tauruses?
I really think there is something to that. I think subconsciously we attract a certain type and a certain type of person. And, you know, we attract what we need for some reason.
Right. I think you're right.
Anyway, so moving right along, you started at an early age, and then pretty much you got involved in music, and you got involved with Dave Bartholomew and his band. That was early on.
Yeah, what happened is that in that same little sandwich shop, what we were talking about. I can't remember which day of the week it was, but I was in there banging on the piano. Now, I had lost my little girlfriend. She quit me because I was out on the road, you know, trying to be a musician.
Been there.
And so I was banging. And I had heard this guy, our first black jockey on the radio.
Right.
Okie Dokie Smith.
Uh-huh.
He had came on, and he had this little... say every day, and it was Lardy Miss Clardy.
Wow, that's
but
interesting.
Eat your mother's homemade pie. Drink Maxwell House coffee. This is when Maxwell House was coming out with this coffee.
Right.
It was in 1951. And I would hear him every day. He'd be on about 20 minutes, never more than a half hour.
Right.
But I became a real fan of his because I loved the way he said, Lord and Miss Claudia.
Wow.
And on this particular day, after losing Nellie, I was banging away. I'd learned how to play an 8-bar blues on a piano.
I figured you were banging your head against the piano for a while. Some great songs were written that way.
That's fun. Well, Lorna Miss Claudia, she came from that, right from that.
Right, and, wow.
And recorded by the biggest rock and roll stars in the world. It's been recorded 169 times.
Unbelievable.
By everybody. You name them, if they sung rock and roll, they sung Lorna Miss Claudia.
Wow. Well, you know, I once, I'm sure you know Jimmy Keys from the Chords. I actually taught his kids, believe it or not, another school story. And we used to have long talks, and he said to me, I didn't know anything about doo-wop. We sang R&B, or we sang jazz, but there was no such thing as doo-wop. That came later, you know?
He told the truth. It did. It did. I mean, ooh-wah, ooh-wah. You know what I mean?
Right.
That's a long way from doo-wah, doo-wah.
You're right. I hear you.
It did come later. And the Clovers, Hank Ballard, the Midnighters.
Right.
Five Keys, you know, back there.
Absolutely.
Same thing, but it wasn't called doo-wah. The Clovers really was one of the, one of the real great groups. One early morning, you know, Mint Julep.
Oh, yeah.
And, of course, that was from Baltimore. Honey Till and Oreos.
Love Potion Number 9, the Clovers.
That's right.
Yep.
You saw me crying in the chapel.
Right.
Honey Till. And then before that, it was Jesse Belvin.
Right.
Jesse Belvin, I call him Mr. Group.
Ah.
Because I think, you know, it was a West Coast group, and I think they were, like, the first ones out there. What I'm saying is, They didn't call it doo-wop then.
Right. Oh, certainly not.
Yeah. And these guys were just so good.
Oh yeah.
And but now the doo-wop is standing tall. You give a doo-wop show almost anywhere, you're going to sell it out.
Pretty much, especially down in Florida, you know, where the baby boomers are, because you know they want to hold on to their music, and. You know, they want to relive it, they want to hold on to it, they love it, and they can't get enough of it. as a matter of fact.
Super Pumas, they all make 65 this year.
Oh, yeah.
This month.
Mm-hmm.
The one who's still here.
Absolutely.
Fantastic. I think it's between 75 and 80 million.
Yeah, I agree.
Fantastic.
I know. And Fats Domino was in that group, I understand, too.
Fats Domino, when Dave Bartholomew asked me to come down, he told me that this guy was coming from California. He did, our group.
Right.
He had a specialty records. He owned the company.
Mm-hmm.
And he got interested. Dave Bartholomew brought him out to my house, to my mother's house, and I played it for him, and he loved it. He brought our group out there. So when I went to the studio, he asked me to come down to record. Fats Domino probably was the hottest artist around the state of Louisiana.
Wow.
Because he had Fat Man. They called me the Fat Man.
Uh-huh.
It all was about adults. The music back during the day.
Right.
Back in the day, I mean. So when I went in there as a kid, you know, 17 plus, and Fats Domino was on the piano, that almost blew me out.
I can imagine.
You know, Fats Domino, Dave Bartholomew, Frankie Ford.
And he kept coming back because your mother fed him, most likely.
Yeah, he was on my first 5 records.
Wow.
And we are friends till today. He's one of my best friends.
Wow, that's
fantastic. I call him right now. He'll go to the piano and start playing Lord of His Claws.
That's fantastic.
Unbelievable.
Really?
Yeah.
So, in 1954, I guess it got cut short because you were drafted and you went to Korea.
That is correct. Actually, it was November in 1953. And it got short because I was integrating the South. Everywhere I went, the white kids would come as spectators, the black kids would come as regulars, and then they'd switch the night.
I can imagine they're all going, are you kidding me? That's Lloyd Price. That guy with the helmet over there is Lloyd Price.
And they was beginning to get into this music because before then, it was an adult pleasure. Kids didn't have that pleasure.
Right.
Yeah, whatever their parents bought, that's what they had to listen to.
Yeah, that's true.
Including in my house, when my father... We had a graphophone, a graphonola.
What did he play?
He didn't play at all. It was one of those wind-ups where you play records.
I see, but what kind of music was he listening to?
He didn't have no real choice.
Right, I see.
It wasn't a whole lot of artists.
Gotcha.
He had a blues and a guitar sound.
Right.
That's what he heard.
Gotcha.
Album, you know, if you bought an album, you know, it weighed... seemed like 13 pounds. They had all those 7/8.
Yeah, that's true. That's right. They were very heavy, the records.
That's right. So what kid would want to carry that around?
No, I hear you. Hey, you know, now music is so accessible. They can get it through the air. I mean, you know, they can download it, you know, right through the Wi-Fi stuff, and it's become a whole different world. It's amazing.
Well, I really think, Mike, that's what's wiping out music business.
I agree.
The record business is down about 61% now.
I know.
And the reason being, you take an instrument the size of a matchbox,
right?
And you can put 1,000 records on it. You know, what happened, instead of the record business being a social business, it's no longer social. Everybody got it in a headset.
It's impersonal.
Yes, and it's compressed. Instead of having big, great speakers so everybody could share it,
right?
It's now compressed so that... The kids today listen to the music. They're not even hearing the music.
You're right.
It is so compressed in these little units.
I agree.
They don't know what the music sounds like.
And not only that, Don and I were talking about this today, Don Teague. For those people that are listening, Dr. Don Teague is an eye doctor who was a pretty popular guy. He was the eye doctor for the Yankees and for the Knicks for a while, and is from Richfield, Connecticut, also an accomplished DJ and a mutual friend of ours. I was talking to Don, and we were saying that the radio personalities are disappearing because they're treating radio differently now, too.
Of course, the radio was built on personalities.
Right.
everybody had their favorite program that they'd listen to and that favorite jockey they wanted to hear.
Right. And look who I'm talking to about personality.
It's all gone away. And I think what's going to happen now,
right.
I heard the other day that England is now back again pressing vinyl records.
Oh, wow. I have a good friend in England that does shows out there. He does rock and roll shows. His name is Vince. I have to talk to him and find out what's going on with that. We talk all the time.
I got you. But they're going back to using vinyl, Mike, and I think that's a good thing.
No, I do, too, because we need to move the line back to where it was in a lot of different ways in this country, you know, not to get into that particularly open that can of worms, but you know, we need to change things and kind of pull things back to where they were in some respects.
Well, music should be one of them because
I agree.
It's universal and it's creative. And now the kids today don't have to worry about creating anything; they just snatch something off a record.
Right. Well, you know,
but sampling.
It's true. I mean, I have in my house, you know, where I produce my stuff, it's a little box on my computer, and it's Pro Tools, and it takes the place of what two rooms of equipment was, you know, 30 and 40 years ago. You know, you had two rooms full of equipment, you had a huge board, you had a huge sound room and whatever. I have up in my loft one microphone, a synthesizer, a synthesizer guitar, and a little box that does every effect that two rooms full of equipment did years ago. And, you know, that's what it's down to. But I will say that digital sound is certainly not as warm as what we used to produce a long time ago.
No, it isn't. Creativity got mistakes in it.
You know, no, I know.
You have to hear a little clinkers, you know.
Are you kidding? I've heard phones ringing on hit records and drummer drops the stick and all kinds of stuff, you know, and it's part of the record.
Yes, it is.
You know.
I am a Pro Tools guy.
Oh, okay.
And I got the G5 and all that stuff.
Yeah, me too. That's exactly what I have, a G5.
Yeah. I still love that real live sound. I love to be unplugged.
Oh, yeah.
To me, that's the good, warm feeling that you get from real live music.
No, I agree with you 100%.
And I think the public has just been robbed over the past 30 years. And now with this iPod and all this compressing the music, I mean, just taking all the soul out of the music.
Right.
And I've completely taken it away and sticking it into the ears of people.
Oh, I know.
And it becoming very unsocial.
No, I agree 100%. 100%.
And they're losing. They're losing a great value that they should be. They should not lose because they're paying for it.
Oh no, I totally agree. I totally agree. So we're going back to the Army, and you come out, and you know you go back up to your boys, and all of a sudden you're staring at Little Richard and Larry Williams, and you know it's a whole new ball game when you get out of the Army.
Yes. I guess after going away for 2 years,
right,
and coming back, it's like going back and restarting your new car.
Right.
When you left, you're paying new car notes, but you don't have a new car.
No, I hear you.
Well, what happened was when I was in the Army and taken away for 2 years, the visionary, the men who saw what Lord and Miss Claudia was doing and
right.
had done
mm-hmm.
in terms of finance and in terms of creativity. They wanted to get on that bandwagon. They wanted to find a Lloyd Price or a Lord and Miss Claudia, one or the other.
I see.
To fill in that vacant spot that I had left. I was talking to the president of Specialty Records. I called him from Tokyo, and he was a little concerned that I didn't have any more records in the can
uh-huh.
that he could put out.
Yeah, I know how that is.
So he asked me about, was there any new artists that I knew that
uh-huh.
I had met in my travel?
Right.
And I told him about this kid I had seen in Georgia, that jumped up on the stage during my intermission,
uh-huh.
and everybody called him Little Richard.
Uh-huh.
And I was so impressed with him, I called my agent and told them about him. And they found him and sent him on the road with Johnny Otis.
Wow, Richard Penniman. Well, you know, the thing about Little Richard was he was good, but his mustache was not as good as yours. Because I'm a mustache guy. I've had mine since I'm 17.
I have too.
And I'm not. I shaved it once and I got scared and I put it back on.
I had to take it off in the Army, but only uh-huh. 6 months.
Uh-huh.
But when I called our route, he sent my little brother to find Little Richard.
Uh-huh.
And the rest of it is history. They went to New Orleans and recorded Tutti Frutti.
Wow, that's amazing.
By golly, Miss Molly.
Uh-huh.
And in the 55, Little Richard was bigger than anybody on earth.
That's right.
And he had took the beat up another notch from where I had it.
Right.
But I had to change my whole program.
Uh-huh.
So instead of me singing that stuff I had sung before going in the Army.
Right.
I listened to a good music station in Washington, D.C. And they were playing an opera. I think the opera was Rigoletto.
Right.
And inside it, there was a beautiful string melody, and it was la-dee-da-dee-da-da-da-da-da.
Right.
And I said, whoa. And in 5 minutes, I had a song, Just Because You Left Instead Goodbye.
I remember that big time.
Yeah, that was on my way back, and that was the first ballad Dick Clark ever played in 1957.
No kidding. And you wrote that one.
Yes.
Unbelievable.
Because you left and said goodbye. Do you think that I will sit and cry? Even if my heart should tell me so, darling, I would rather let you go. Just because you think that you're so smart, going around and breaking lovers' heart. Before I let this thing happen to me, darling, I would rather swim the sea. I know you think you're smart, just going around breaking lovers' heart, just because I want someone who's kind, with a heart as good and pure as mine. But maybe I am asking for too much. Darling, please don't ever break my heart.
Now, Stagger Lee came from an old blues tune, I understand.
Well, actually, it was not so much the tune as it was the legend.
I see.
It was absolutely a guy called Billy Lawrence, and he had his buddy. They would gamble together. And then when they couldn't find no one to gamble with, they gambled with each other.
Uh-huh.
Billy got the best of Stagger Lee.
Right.
What they call cock dice.
Right, okay.
He and down on the dice, and the dice turned right into 7.
Gotcha.
Turned into 12.
Gotcha.
In any event, he beat Sagalee.
Okay.
Sagalee's hat, his watch, whatever it was, and whatever value it was at
right.
the time, Billy won it.
Uh-huh.
Sagalee couldn't take it. He knew that Billy was cheating, so he went home and got his 44. And this is a true, true legend. I had heard many little different cliches about it.
Right.
When I was a kid, but never heard a full story.
Uh-huh.
What I did while in career, I just put a top on it. The night was clear.
Right.
And put the bulldog up front.
Wow.
And made it, instead of calling it Shackley or Smackley.
Right.
I called it Staggerly.
Right.
And, it, you know, 5 million times later, people liked it.
The night was clear and the moon was yellow. And the leaves came tumbling down. I was standing on the corner when I heard my bulldog bark. He was barking at the two men who were gambling in the dark. It was Staggerly and Billy, two men who gambled late. Staggerly threw 7, Billy swore that.
Well, what's interesting, too, with that song, because, I mean, I've been a vocalist since I'm a kid and sung a lot of stuff. It's not an easy song to do and to do it right. I've heard a lot of people sing that song, and only a couple of guys really sing that song well.
Well, and they have to sing it well. They got to sing my version the way I did it.
Oh, I hear you. And, you know, there's that old rumor years ago about Dick Clark you know, being so pure and innocent, which we all know that he really wasn't that pure and innocent. But, you know, he had a problem with the lyrics and he wanted it cleaned up a little bit or whatever. You know, I heard that rumor once.
He did, Mike. He didn't like the part where Staggerly shot Billy.
Uh-huh.
Suppose he was still doing American Bandstand today.
Yeah. I mean, forget it. I mean, that's nothing compared to what's going on today musically in America. It's amazing. It's amazing what we thought was bad news in those days.
Yes, no question. Work with me, Andy. They thought that was terrible.
Yeah.
Well, you know, we overcome anything, and now when you turn on radio, you need to put catching mitt on your kids' ears.
Oh yeah, no, I agree with you 100%. You know, I agree 100%. Tell me about Merritt Mel Dalton. Was he a sax player that played on your records?
Oh, yeah, Dalton. Dalton was from Pennsylvania.
Yep.
And he was a real good saxophone player.
Right.
And I'm saying was in passing because I haven't heard from him in a minute.
Uh-huh.
But I had always loved good musicians. And I tried to keep a good band, and Dalton was one of the best.
Right. I heard he was with you for a long time, even did the Sullivan Show with you.
Yes, he did.
Right.
In fact, that when I did the Sullivan Show the first time, the whole band was from Pittsburgh.
Uh-huh.
And because my partner was in Pittsburgh, Harold Logan.
Right.
He was, you know, his base was in Pittsburgh at the time, so I was there a lot.
Well, you know, I'm going to tell the listeners that you had an interesting situation because not only were you writing your material, much of it, but you were also one of the executives of the record company. You don't really hear that too often.
Well, actually, it was my record company.
Exactly right. So you know, I think back to Morris Levy and I say to myself, you know, there were an awful lot of people who were controlled by the record executives, but you didn't have that problem. You could pretty much write yourself a check, I guess.
After I came out to service, I've only had like one record contract. You know, where you sign as an artist?
I hear you.
That's when I was 17 years old when I did Lord and Miss Claudia.
Right.
But after that, I kind of like been on my own in terms of publishing and producing.
That's great because, you know, you and I know that when you give that up to other people, it's you don't know what's coming.
No question about it. And since I was a creator, I always wanted to manage the creativity part.
That's amazing.
I do. And if I was going to do that, I may as well publish it.
No, I agree with you because everybody knows that, you know, it's publishing. Everybody wants the publishing. Even when you go, I remember years ago going to the Brill Building with songs and to record companies and whatever. Right away, the first thing they want to do is take away the publishing.
And give you a contract for hire.
Right. Exactly right.
And give you nothing for it. Hire you with no pay.
Right. And a lot of guys did that because they figured, oh, my God, you know, it's like I'm going to sign a record contract and, you know, I'm a young kid and wow, wow. And they don't realize that a record contract is just the beginning of something. It's not the end of anything. It's only the beginning.
That is correct.
You know, wow, I signed the record contract. And now what?
Right. It's like a calling card. It's
right.
Like every card's made up.
Exactly.
You always got to put the business with show. That's why they call it show business.
Well, I understand.
But, you know, music business and creativity is the day of the innocent.
Right.
Yes, these guys, the older guys, just took total advantage of that innocence.
Right.
And we kids just wanted to write songs. Could you imagine what it was 40, 50 years ago to hear your name called on the radio?
Absolutely.
Only somebody playing your song on the radio. That was amazing.
Well, I've heard some of my stuff come back over the radio to me, even though I never got into the top 10. And it's a feeling that you just can't replace no matter what level you're doing on.
No, you absolutely. I mean, and back when you was a kid on all the little girls in your hood.
Right.
I heard you on the radio.
Right. Yeah, but, you know, you had a different situation going on because here comes Stagger Lee, and I can't remember, I'm thinking back and I'm saying to myself, people were walking around in the streets singing Personality to each other. That hook was such a giant hook that it just lasted for such a long time, and here it is, Stagger Lee number one, Personality number one. You know, bang, bang, bang. That's a great situation, Lloyd.
No question about it. Not only here in America, around the world.
Over and over, I tried to prove my love to you. Over and over, what more can I do? Over.
Personality,
walk
with personality,
talk with
personality,
smile
with
walk.
Yeah.
Even though they didn't have that many people. But from that developed the Bee Gees and Olivia Newton-John and
right.
many, many more.
Uh-huh.
So the kids, it was so great that influenced the kids where they wanted to become somebody on the radio.
Well,
just as I did when I was a kid. If I could just hear myself on the radio. I don't know why. I had no knowledge of the radio. No history of anybody being in radio.
And then here comes, I'm going to get married. Hey, you know, we all remember that song.
I was at the Williams and Mary University down in Virginia.
Right.
In the month of June, and everybody was talking about getting married.
Uh-huh.
So I went out on the basketball court, and when I came back, I had that song, Johnny, You're Too Young.
Time she kissed me, it's setting my world on fire. How come every time she leave me, it seems like I've lost a part? I may be too young to marry, but not to hide an aching heart. Shucks, I wanna get married. Kiss me, it thrills me from head to toe. How come every time I see her, it moves me just more and more? I may be too young to marry, don't you think I ought to know? Shucks, I wanna get married, my name she'll carry. To hide an aching heart.
So young,
just I wanna get married.
You're so young.
My name she'll carry.
You're so young, Johnny, you're so smart.
But I'm not smart enough to hide an aching heart.
So young,
just I wanna get married.
You're so young.
My name she'll carry.
You're so young.
That's great. But, you know, what's really funny, and I was thinking about this today, and I'm going, where were you on our wedding day? And I'm thinking to myself, you know, I got bad news that you went away. And then I'm saying the part that says, give me back my ring. Nowadays, you don't get the ring back.
No.
You can yell all week long. You ain't getting the ring back.
Well, that followed I'm going to get married, you know, and then the,
right,
to the chapel and she ain't there.
Right.
And then...
Because I know, you know, like I'm in Florida, in Boca, you don't get the ring back.
I hear you loud and clear.
You know, it's just the way it is. Even though the law says that you're entitled to it, you don't get it back.
You just don't get it back.
It's gone.
It's fun doing that stuff, but, you know,
oh, yeah,
like you were, you know, you're just wild in your imagination. You get carried away in your own dream.
Yeah. Oh, 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 oh.
That you went away. Where were you, little girl, I say? Where were you on our wedding day? Whoa,
whoa,
give me back my ring. Whoa,
whoa,
whoa, whoa, I ain't gonna let you keep a thing. Now where were you when I said I do? Everybody laughing, my in-laws too. Where were you, little girl, I say? Where were you on our wedding day? Whoa,
whoa,
give me back my ring.
Whoa,
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 whoa, I ain't gonna let you keep a thing.
How was it doing the Apollo?
Well, the first time I did the Apollo, that was during the Lord of Miss Claudia period when
right.
I first started to record.
Yeah.
Just to think of going to New York was big.
Right.
From where I was. Uh-huh. You know, I'd seen all these pictures, 34th Street, and Christmas, every Christmas I'd sit there and wonder how far was New York, you know, from Kenner.
Right.
And here I am being called over there to work.
Right.
Apollo Theater.
Right.
It was more than a dream.
Oh, you know, I can imagine.
Getting on a rocket going to the moon.
Right.
And when I got there, people all around the corner to come in to see me, just around from 7th Avenue, around 8th Avenue.
I can imagine they were saying, here comes this Cajun with a mustache that smells like fish, but he's got a number but he's got a number one record.
Yeah, well, it wasn't exactly developed at that time. I was only 17 and a half years old.
Yeah, I'm just teasing, you know.
Yeah, but I was doing 7 shows a day, and they still couldn't get it.
Wow.
Thank you.
can imagine.
Yeah.
I can imagine that it was. So, you know, we're moving through your career, and 1969, Logan was murdered.
Yes, I had sort of laid back. I thought I had won everything you could win in the music business.
Yeah.
And I wanted to just be a producer and develop my record label.
Yeah, that's pretty heavy, though, you know, having one of your partners just, like, leave the scene like that, you know?
Yeah, well, I had came up with Wilson Pickett. Wilson was on fire.
Right.
And I wasn't doing radio, but I had bought night radio.
Uh-huh.
In New York. I bought it in Atlanta. I bought it in New Orleans and Detroit and a few other cities. I bought night radio to play my own product.
Wow.
And we were doing very, very well with that. And from that, I had opened a nightclub at 152nd and Broadway.
That was Turntable.
Yeah, it was the original Birdland.
Yeah.
The jazz corner of the world.
Yeah.
Then I decided to change it, call it the Turntable, because...
I know where it was.
Okay.
I do.
The kids was really getting into music.
Uh-huh.
But my goal was to move the Rhythm and Blues Act across 110th Street, because they had never played nothing but the Apollo.
Gotcha.
They had not. I figured our music should be exposed everywhere. People everywhere was buying the record.
Right.
So why not have it downtown at the Cope?
So the Clovers were singing Devil or Angel downtown now, right?
No, I never had the Clovers down there.
Oh, okay.
Our opening act was James Brown.
Oh.
When he had Get on a Good Foot.
Gotcha.
And then the Coasters, Maxine Brown, Howard Tate, Garnett Mim.
Wow.
You know, that group, and that King Curtis.
Wow.
You know, it was really, when I started lining them up on Broadway, like I did at the Apollo Theater, everybody started to use, you know, the Rhythm and Blues Acts.
Wow.
Copacabana, the Basin Street East.
Wow.
Waldorf. Everybody started using these rock and roll acts. But it didn't happen until I opened the nightclub on Broadway.
Wow, that's
and
amazing.
And right after that, and what happened with Logan, I was going to be the first rhythm and blues act to have a television show.
Right.
New York live in the 60s.
Right.
I was right across the street from Ed Sullivan.
Uh-huh.
And Ed Sullivan and the Ray Block Orchestra used to rehearse in my club every Friday and Saturday.
Wow.
Before they went on the air on CBS on Sunday.
Now, that was smart. Well, at least you knew what was coming ahead of time.
Absolutely. Larry Spangler, who had Merv Griffin at that time.
Right.
Produced the Merv Griffin Show, figured that I would be the only guy in the world. Sammy Davis didn't make it. Nat Cole didn't make it with a TV show.
Right.
With me going to the young adult, I would make it as an interracial television show.
Gotcha.
The night we had the press conference, it was unbelievable. You couldn't get in for Associated Press and all the papers of America and perhaps around the world.
Wow.
The next day, my name should have been in every 1,700 Associated newspapers. And that was what we talked about that night.
Right.
But the next morning, I got a phone call that they found my partner shot in the office.
Unbelievable.
The very next morning.
Wow.
And what hit the newspaper that day was Lloyd Price's manager and partner had two bullets in the head.
Wow.
And that killed everything.
So, well, possibly somebody didn't want that to happen.
Well, that's exactly what we suspected. But
yeah.
It's 41 years this year.
Right.
And they never found anybody who did it.
That's amazing.
It's a cold case.
Yeah. Well, you know, sometimes you don't discover what's going on with things like that, and sometimes you just never know. It's
it was not good times either. You know, the America damn near burned down in 68, 69,
right,
all the way through the mid-70s.
Right.
Not the best times in this country.
You're right.
So anything could happen. You know, I got thousands of phone calls about nigger clothes that going down. We don't want white kids coming down there.
Unbelievable.
In New York City. So so be it, but as things and time goes.
Well, we forget that it wasn't too long ago that, we were very restricted in a lot of areas in this country. And
it was right around the corner. Carter.
Yeah, and things have just opened up just like not too long ago. Myself being a dean in a multicultural school for 30 years, I can tell you how it was as far as multiculturalism and you know, what went on with different ethnicities, because, you know, I had the kids all day long and the parents, you know, and the halls there were like the streets. So, you know, it was amazing.
Yes, it was. And that being political.
Yeah.
What's happening right now.
Yeah.
In the 21st century.
Well, we still have a lot to fix.
There's no doubt about it. But this is still the greatest country in the world.
Absolutely. That's why when I hear people, you know, whatever our differences are here, you know, our differences are contained. You go to other parts of the world, because my wife and I travel a lot, and we're always glad to get home.
I hear you. I mean, when I'm overseas and when it's a fashion seatbelt, we're landing in LaGuardia or
right.
A whole different thing happens to your body.
Even the plumbing is better.
Yeah.
The plumbing is better in the United States.
I mean, even leaving England, you know, some of the
three
parts of the world.
You're right. I agree.
I can't wait to get back to America.
I agree with you.
And I understand the situation, you know, and what I do understand more than anything, less than 40 years ago, there was only in this country, we are domestic people.
Correct.
40 years ago, 35% of Americans had passports. Could you imagine that?
Right.
And to us, going to Nassau was overseas.
Right, I agree.
And Jamaica was going to the moon.
Right.
That was a long ways away.
Yeah, I remember, you know, when I was a kid, my parents used to live to go to Puerto Rico and everything, and that was about as far as they ventured.
Yes, I mean, and that's exactly what I'm saying, so.
Yeah.
But you got to travel to understand the conditions of the United States.
No, I agree.
We are a really domestic animal.
I agree.
No, you can't, the lines are so long at the passport office, but it's not American.
Right, and that's of course, you know, that's another whole interview as well.
Yes, it is.
And we can have that one on a different night, you know, because I love to talk about that stuff, but then, you know, what happens is then I can talk about that for 2 or 3 hours without stopping, you know.
I hear you, Mike.
Because we all have our feelings about that, you know. But, hey, you know, right now, today, we have a lot of things going on that are just kind of could go this way, could go that way, you know, especially the economy. It's you know, who knows what's going to happen.
That's right. But you know what hooked it all together? When you think of this great country, its great artists.
Right.
Being probably one of our largest exports. It's been our music.
Oh, Lady Luck turned her back on me. Now I'm full of misery. There's only one thing left for me to do. Try not to think about you. Things go wrong. for me to do is try not to think about you.
Well, you know, I say to people, too, when I've had the toughest times in my life, thank you, Lord, for putting the guitar in my hands when I was very young. Thank you for giving me the opportunity to open my mouth and realize that I could sing, because I'm doing it professionally since I'm 15. And I'm you know, I'm in my 60s now, and I'm still doing it. And, you know, whenever I'm feeling down, I can just get into my music. And it heals me, period.
Absolutely, and it does it universally.
Right.
You know, our music is understood anywhere in the world. I don't care what language they speak.
That's true.
You know, if you go to Egypt, you may hear James Brown, "Get on a Good Foot."
Right. No, I know.
And look, the world trying to rap. They're rapping in Japanese. They're rapping in German.
I'm going to tell you a funny story. Vanilla Ice is remodeling a house directly across the street from me. If I walk out of my front door, we live in a gated community in Wellington, Florida, and he flips houses as one of the things that he does. And they're doing a reality show that they just got finished filming, and it's going to be on TV probably for about 6 or 8 weeks. And what they did, they took a house where somebody's mortgage went down. It was a, you know, multi-million dollar house. And the guy cannibalized it because, you know, that's what they do nowadays. They take all the copper out of it and the brass and the pavers and the plumbing and, you know. And we had a discussion because he parks his Rolls in my driveway once in a while. And I told him, if not for us guys, there would be no you guys, because really everything grew out of the R&B. It all, you know, I mean, you know, once the Mills Brothers opened their mouth and the Ink Spots and the Orioles in 1946 and the Platters who covered the Ink Spots, really, and the Evolution, you know, it all evolved from those guys who sang the R&B. There would be none of these other groups. You know, the Beatles would not have had their influence. And so on and so forth.
That is totally correct.
You know, so did the R&B of the 70s, you know, with the Intruders and the Manhattans and the disco groups. It all grew out of the R&B harmonies. So I rest my case.
And it's a good case to rest, because it's all true.
Oh, yeah. You know.
And I wonder sometimes, why don't these new kids say anything about that when they get on the stage?
You mean pay homage to the guys that went before them?
They thank everybody except the guys who knocked down the wall.
No, I understand that.
The sound of the rock.
You know, it's funny. Right after we got, we did the White House thing with in '98 for the Clintons with Harmony Street, I got a phone call from a guy by the name of Terry Stewart, and I know you know who he is. He's the CEO of the Rock and Roll Hall of Fame.
He called me today.
No kidding. He's a very good friend of mine. He had a house in Stamford, Connecticut area. And we went to a couple of his parties, and we sang for him. Whatever we were actually there the New Year's of 98-99, right after we did the White House with Harmony Street. And he's always remained a good friend. He invited us, Paulette and I, out to the Rock last year, and unfortunately, Paulette had an emergency kidney stone operation. Like the day before, and we couldn't go, but. You know, what a wonderful situation that is. And I just have to say that Lloyd Price is on a very, very short selective list of people that made this music happen, and that is to be an inductee into the Rock and Roll Hall of Fame. So, I mean, that's a wonderful thing, Lloyd.
Well, I thank you very much, Mike.
It's a great honor.
Darling, hold me, hold me, hold me, and never,
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 never.
And Terry is a trip. I can show you pictures of Terry that you wouldn't believe. He had a party. His party on that New Year's was an eat down, dress up party. So everybody came in tuxes, but the food was White Castle, pizza, French fries, hot dogs. So it was dress up, eat down. So in 1993, you were on tour with Jerry Lee. You were on a tour with Gary U.S. Bonds, Gene Chandler, who I've worked with a bunch of times, Benny King, and they were called the Four Kings of Rhythm and Blues.
That's right.
So that's a good bunch.
Yeah, I thought that it was an excellent show. We put together a big band, and we were doing the casinos and the universities, and that show will work now. It's just that I got too busy to continue, but it was an excellent, excellent package.
Right.
Hi, everybody. I'm Lloyd Price. Welcome to The Rewind, Time Life's official blog. Have a look around. Enjoy.
No rest.
Just yours. I won't hide, I won't cry, I can't lie. That's why. No ifs, no ands, I'm yours. Get up, come here. Baby, don't have no fear. I love you with soul. Sure, I'm yours. No ifs, no ands, just yours.
No ifs,
you know I'm positive.
No ands,
you know I'm positive. You know I'm positive. You know I'm positive.
No ifs,
you know I'm positive.
No ands,
you know I'm positive.
Just yours.
No ifs, no ands, just yours. No ifs, no ands, I'm yours. No ifs, no ands, I'm yours.
And the other thing that I found out about Lloyd is that you've been with a lot of different record companies. You've touched a lot of different record companies, Scepter and Reprise and Roy Orbison's label, and you've touched an awful lot of things that I didn't know you were involved in.
And they're always friends of mine. Monument Records, Fred Foster.
Right.
Reprise, Frank Sinatra.
Right.
After Florence Greenberg and Luther Dixon. I knew all these people, and I was a free agent. So I just dropped a record everywhere. You
right.
Know?
and one of the other things that I read that I didn't know is that really, you were the one that, when you came back from Korea, you said, you know, I've been working with a lot of big bands, and, you know, basically, you know, you guys that are doing rock and roll in the studio were doing it with, you know, just a basic rhythm section. So your idea was to incorporate a little more of a jazz sound and a bigger orchestra into the music at that time rather than just having, you know, a small rhythm section.
And with not with doo-wop singers, with the real quality singers.
Right.
The Ray Charles singers on all the records.
Wow.
And they was like the main choir in New York.
Well, you know, when you get a chorus going behind you, you know, I mean, you know, there were a lot of records that were very distinctive because you knew that the production was really big production.
That's right. I was kind of like, I had Don Costa as an arranger.
Well, it doesn't get any better than that. I mean, you're talking about Sinatra's guy, and you know, he and Nelson Riddle did most of the Sinatra stuff.
That's correct.
You know.
And I was, why not use the best chorus? So we used the Ray Charles singers.
Wow.
And just give them notes like we would do a horn.
I hear you.
And that's why you hear all that little doo-doo-doo-doo, that stuff on the record.
Yeah.
And it all worked. It went, it took me completely out the category of rhythm and blues.
But not everybody can do that. It has to be arranged tastefully, and you have to know what you're doing. I mean, you know, because, you know, I mean, I know myself because I do a lot of arranging. I mean, you know, when the horns come in, they gotta be placed so that they're not stepping on the vocals. They gotta be tastefully done. They gotta be sometimes on the upbeats. They gotta be, you know, you gotta put them where they're not gonna get in the way. You know.
Well, that is right, Mike. But with my limited ability of playing piano, I knew exactly where these things should go.
Yeah.
And I just translate them down to Don Costa. and he put them on sheet. So.
Isn't it great, though, to have a point of reference like a piano? I mean, I'm not that great a piano player, but I'm a pretty good guitar player. So when I can actually use the guitar as a point of reference, it makes it so much easier. And I really pity those guys that walk around, they have an idea in their head, and they don't know how to impart that idea because they can't put it on the guitar and show you, and they don't have that point of reference, you know?
That's right. It's a handicap when you can't really express that idea.
Yeah.
Because you have to get it out of your head.
Right.
Get it in the musician's and the arranger's head.
Yeah.
Then get it to the engineer to get it on tape. And then get it to the promotion man to get to the distributor, to get to the radio station, to get to the public. That's how right that idea got to be.
Oh, yeah. Some of the best guys I ever worked with could not read music. They heard it, and it just went right through their fingers into the instrument.
Yeah, and the next night when you play, you thought you had a good night, and the next night would be disastrous because they don't remember it.
How many, what's really funny, too, sometimes is, you know, you're with a group and you get on stage, and that's the night that everybody tells you how great you were, and you walk off thinking, I didn't have a lot of energy, I wasn't really that good. And then you have nights where you think you're great, and everybody goes,
Yeah, right. I mean, that's your business.
Yeah. So, man, well, see, it depends on their head. When you're looking out at the audience, you know, and you see the one guy sleeping, but his wife is really paying attention, and then you look,
right.
You never know what they're thinking. I mean, I've, you know, in these big oldie shows, you look out there. Sometimes I call it the oil painting. It's like, it's there, but it's like frozen. And you look out there, and I've called them. I said, you people look like an oil painting. And yet, when you talk to them after the show, they all loved it, but they're not giving you anything back, you know.
And those are the ones who would sit in the front row.
Yeah, you know. I mean, it's just amazing. I don't know. So anyway, you've also done some TV.
Oh yeah,
you did the show Amen.
I did several different TV shows. Of course, the latest one I did was Tremé.
Yes, I heard about that. Let's talk about Tremé. That's on HBO.
Yeah, and I did 26 to 27 Dick Clark shows.
Wow, that's...
I did Hullabaloo, Soul Train.
Oh, I remember Hullabaloo.
Yeah, and there was some more.
Uh-huh.
I'm trying to think.
Probably Shindig.
Yeah, I did the Shindig. Anybody who had a TV show, I did it.
Don Cornelius was the best, man. Wow.
And hundreds of these local TV shows with these local jockeys.
Right. How was Dick Clark?
Dick was very nice. Dick is I would call Dick a friend.
So,
well, it's unfortunate, but he had a stroke.
Yeah, I know.
He's a good man.
You know, somebody said to me the other day, a songwriter, they said, you spend your whole life having your first hit, and then you got to get your next hit ready, you know, real fast after that, because the record company wants it right away.
Yes.
You know. And a lot of people never get to their second hit.
That's right.
But you're spoiled, man. You had all these number ones. You had all these number ones. And, you know, I mean, personality, you know, when you listen to, you know, oldie stations around the country, that song is still being played like crazy.
Somewhere it's played every 4 minutes.
Yeah. Isn't that amazing?
Somewhere in the world.
Well, you know what? It's probably one of the most simplistic and the most mindful and, you know, hook that you can imagine, and it pulls you in, because even the word personality is a word that you light up when you hear that word, because it's such a positive word.
Absolutely. Absolutely.
And especially when the hook goes, well, you've got personality, it's like, well, I've got personality. You know, I mean, it's like the perfect hook. I say to myself, wow, I wish I had thought of that. I mean, think about it. I'm sure you have.
Yeah, it was such an easy song to do, you know. And I was riding down the turnpike, and I said, you know, I got to have another song. Don Carson had called me about it.
Right.
So I said, you know what? I got to come up with something. And I thought about personality.
Yeah, but you know, I mean, it's such a simple song. You've got personality.
Absolutely.
Walk with personality. Talk with personality. You know, and I'll be a fool for you. How many times has that been said? I mean, you know, that song has, you know, when you think about it, now I'm really starting to think about it. That song has everything in it, and it's said very short and to the point. You know, that's what makes it a great tune.
Yes, because, you know, I just put everything in there that people does.
Right.
You walk with it, you talk with it, you smile with it.
Right.
And
enough said, you know, it's like, I agree. But let's get into something else now, which I never knew. And that is that you took your mother's recipes and her food and, you know, the good food. And you're actually involved with Icon Food Brands.
Yes, we came up with a sweet potato product. And got it in Walmart because nobody ever had a sweet potato cookie on the shelf.
Wow.
And it was my father who did all that.
Uh-huh.
And I remembered how he did it. He never made cookies. He made everything except a cookie.
Uh-huh.
And I came up with the cookie out of the sweet potato, and we went on into Walmart and 7-Eleven and many of those other little stores.
Right. Now, is that under Lordy Miss Clordy Food Products?
That's under, yes, Lordy Miss Clordy's too.
And there's a clothing line as well?
Well, we do have an apparel situation.
Right.
We haven't made any clothes yet.
Oh, okay. Hey, listen. I guess, you know, the thought comes before the deed, so...
Absolutely.
That'll, you know, I'm sure that'll happen soon, you know. Lloyd, tell me about the Treme series. That has to do with Katrina.
Yes, what happened is David Simon, the producer, is just a wonderful producer. He came up with this idea of Treme, and it took off like a rocket on HBO. It's about the local situation with musicians and their condition in New Orleans.
Wow.
And it's in the area of New Orleans that's called Treme.
Right, and you're emotionally involved with that because you're a native of New Orleans.
That's correct. I was born at the Charity Hospital, right?
My wife says it's New Orleans and never mind, but I say New Orleans.
Yeah, well, they say New Orleans.
Right.
But I love that series, and it's red hot, and they got some really, really good things going. What it does most of all is it highlights the musicians and that great music in New Orleans. The Rock and Roll Hall of Fame should have been in New Orleans, and I spoke to Terry about that a lot.
Right.
And, of course, it was all circuit around economics. When they got the money to do the Hall of Fame, the money was earmarked for Cleveland because, of course, of Alan Freed.
Right. And not every airline flies into Cleveland. It's tough to get to. I think only Continental and one other. You know, you got to fly somewhere else and then drive up to Cleveland. It's not easy to get to. So probably should have been in New Orleans.
Very difficult to get to.
But I know.
What happened was it was the money. Ahmet Erdogan of Atlantic Records.
Right.
You know, he found the money. So, and the government gave him matching money. So that was it. It became the Hall of Fame out in Cleveland instead of New Orleans.
Right.
New Orleans now will have a rock and roll, not a rock and roll, but they will have a Hall of Fame because of the great music that they're doing.
Right.
Now that Treme is such a success, that's one of the major contributions.
Well, we're going to catch that on HBO. Finally, Lloyd, I want to ask you about this. My good friend and your good friend, Don Teague, let me in on some information and told me that in the works is a show, a musical, which is going to be called Lordy Miss Claudie, which is about the life of Lloyd Price. How on the money am I with saying that?
Well, you're right on the money. It's from my new book. It's called Lordy Miss Claudie, The True King of the 50s.
Right, and you know, the guys that are behind this, as well as yourself, are hoping to take it to Broadway and make it a big success.
Oh yeah, Dr. Teague, Phil Ramone, John Benanti.
Right.
Just a great team of people. Of course, Phil Ramone, he's got, I think, 15 to 16 Grammys. He's producing Barbara Streisand, Aretha Franklin.
This I know.
And of course, Dr. Teague, he's a musical historian.
Absolutely.
And John Benanti is. He was formerly the producer of the Christmas shows at Radio City Music Hall.
Right.
And now a Broadway producer. And our first little event we had yesterday evening was just spectacular.
Right. Well, you know, actually, Don told me about this a few months ago when we had dinner. You know, that's something that I am really looking forward to become a great success because you deserve it and all the guys behind it deserve it. And when it goes to Broadway, I want to be there. And I think it will be a giant success. When he told me the idea, I thought it was perfect. He even told me some of the people that might be considered to play Lloyd. And I thought that was a great idea. We don't have to mention that right now. But I just think it's a wonderful idea. I wish you all the success in the world.
I thank you very much. And I think that we're going to have a real winner because Lordy Miss Claudie, the musical, is like a piece of gold. You can only find it once. You know, it's like silver or rice or corn.
Right.
It can only be one, and that Lordy Miss Claudie was the first one out the box to sell a million records and to change music history forever. Not just, I mean, worldwide. Open many, many doors.
No, I understand that totally. Lloyd, I want to thank you from the bottom of my heart. Lloyd Price, Mr. Personality, Rock and Roll Hall of Fame legend, R&B royalty, thank you so much for being on the Harmony Street Show. I thank you, I thank you, I thank you.
Thank you, thank you, thank you, Mike, yeah. And peace be with you.
I just want to tell you how thrilled I am to do this because I can't tell you for how many years I looked up to you, and for how many years I considered you one of my idols.
Well, I thank you, Mike. It's my pleasure. No doubt about it.
Thanks, and we'll be talking real soon. Okay.
Okay, Mike.
That was my guest on the Harmony Street Show, Rock and Roll Hall of Fame legend, Mr. Lloyd Price. Thank you for listening. Don't forget, harmonystreet@yahoo.com if you'd like to talk to me. www.harmonystreet.biz if you'd like to hear some of my archived interviews and take a look at a really wonderful website with a lot of music, a lot of pictures, and a lot of good history. Take care. This is Mike Miller. Love you all. Keep listening. Bye now.
Open up your heart, recall how it used to be, remember all the love we found, ooh,
on Harmony Street,
ooh,
there was a place
we
that we used to go, when we were feeling down,
and
we were low. We couldn't believe our eyes
when
we were there. Wasn't it a big surprise to find we really cared? We looked into each other's hearts.
Street.
Yes, there were times when we had it all.